Good afternoon. It's just about 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Wednesday, the 19th of November, the year 2014. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk with some of the cast and crew of Perseverance Theater's production of the sold-out Chicago. Get an update of youth hockey activities. Eric Forrest from Trail Mix will showcase Saturday's annual dinner and auction. Amy Humphries from Shea Alaska will be here to highlight upcoming cooking classes. And Sean Isley will be here to talk about 25 years of Discovery Southeast. That Writer's Almanac, Verno, Music and More today on a Juneau afternoon. For the forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain, patchy fog. Later on, low temperatures around 35 degrees. Thursday, mostly cloudy skies with patchy fog in the morning and a chance of rain in the afternoon with high temperatures of 41 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Democrats in the U.S. Senate rejected the Keystone Pipeline Tuesday. Native people were among those to react to the news, which included a victory song in the chamber. Matt Laszlo has more.
Even though many Native leaders are happy the Senate rejected the controversial oil pipeline that would stretch from Canada to the Gulf of Mexico, next year Democrats seem unlikely to have the votes to keep the pipeline from being built when Republicans take control of the Senate. That may be why at least 5 members of the Sioux tribe erupted in protest in the Senate chamber before being arrested and led through the Capitol while chanting. Even with the GOP in charge in January, at least one Sioux leader intends to do all he can to block the pipeline. Cyril Scott is president of the Rosebud Sioux Tribe. While President Scott says he doesn't want violence, he does want Senate Republicans to know that Lakota warriors camping out are prepared to halt construction crews by any means necessary.
We drew a line in the sand, Testus. You'll see an Indian uprising. The last big one was the Battle of the Little Bighorn, and the United States government lost one of their great generals that day. Let's see who Keystone XL loses.
Wyoming Republican Senator John Barrasso voted to move forward on construction of the pipeline. He says no small factor in his decision were official estimates of how many more jobs would result.
Well, the State Department has said 42,000 jobs. The number of labor unions have come out forcefully in support of the pipeline.
President Scott says those job estimates, which House Speaker John Boehner has suggested could be as high as 100,000, are too short-term to be meaningful for the Lakota or anyone else.
But that's only 50 permanent jobs. Once the Keystone is built.
The close, virtually party-line vote to block construction of the Keystone Pipeline tested the resolve of Democrats, and a Republican Senate may test the resolve of Lakota leaders. I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
We continue our coverage of Keystone by hearing from those occupying a protest camp in South Dakota. Charles Michael Ray reports.
A bone-chilling wind is blowing ribbons of snow across the open prairie and rattling an old army tent that is the main shelter at the Spirit Camp. Inside, Chris Firesunder tends a small wood stove. He's among those working to stop the Keystone Pipeline.
A warrior sacrifices his life for his people and his future generation. I'm out here for my future kids, grandkids, your future kids, grandkids, everybody.
This camp sits just east of the Rosebud Reservation and right along the proposed pipeline route. It's been occupied continuously since this spring. Keith Fielder is one of those here. He's against trading temporary construction jobs for the threat of an oil spill that could harm water quality.
Water is just, it's life for everyone and everything on this planet. And so water will always be an issue. This is a water camp.
Native Americans have joined with non-native landowners who oppose allowing a foreign company to use eminent domain to cross their property. But not everyone in rural America is against this pipeline. Those like Steve Reed with the West Central Electric Co-op in Murdo say it will provide a much-needed economic boost to the rural economy. More than anything, Reed says he's tired of this issue being in limbo.
Whether Keystone's approved or not, we would just ask the Congress, the administration, everybody, do your job, make a decision, whatever that decision is, so we can all move forward one way or the other.
That final decision may not come so soon. While supporters couldn't muster enough votes this time, Republicans are promising to approve the project in the next Congress when they hold a majority. Those occupying the Spirit Camp say they won't move until the threat is over. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the Striking Eagle Invitational Basketball Tournament and Educational Fair on December 31st. Information on services and the fair at ahcnm.org. Science, technology, engineering, and math students thrive at New Mexico Tech. Personalized instruction, rigorous curriculum, undergrad research opportunities. New Mexico Tech, where the smart kids go. Info in Winds of Change magazine or visit nmt.edu. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. First guest is Charity Haskins. She's one of the players in the sold-out run of Chicago at Perseverance Theater. Charity, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thanks for having me this afternoon.
No, you really don't have to come down and be on the air because you're sold out already.
Oh, but you can still get tickets. I mean, it's a little harder now because we are sold out and everybody's coming to see the show multiple times. But you can get on the waiting list an hour ahead of time, come in and try to see the show. There's always patrons and people that won't show up for their tickets. So good chances are you'll get in to see the show. Or you can keep checking back on our website at perseverancetheater.org or 907-463-TIXX, T-I-X-S. You can call in and keep checking for cancellations as well.
So if you have seen the show already and would like to make an opening for someone else who hasn't seen the show, they should call the theater and arrange it with them.
I guess that just depends on how badly you want to see the show again, because no one's going to blame you for that.
Charity, who do you play in?
I play Roxy Hart.
For people who haven't heard yet, give me a basic idea of the plot, please.
Yeah, sure thing. Well, Chicago is a musical that's based on the play that Maureen Dallas Watkins wrote, and this is actually based on murderesses that really lived in the 20th century, and it's kind of based upon these cases of two women in particular that ended up getting off and not getting charged for murder. So we follow Roxy Hart from the beginning when she shoots her lover, and we kind of follow the process that she goes through of getting a lawyer and trying to get not charged for murder. And you get to meet several fun characters along the way, including her lawyer, Billy Flynn. He's one of my favorite characters in the show. And, of course, you meet the phenomenal Velma Kelly, who is kind of the idea of a vaudeville showgirl at the time, and she's famous, but she's in jail because she's also killed her lover as well. And you kind of follow these two women and their walk to fame through being a murderess.
Is it funny?
It's hilarious.
Murder and all that stuff is still funny.
Sorry?
With murder and all that stuff, it's still funny.
Oh, yeah, you know. I mean, it's kind of a grimy topic and really not something to be joked about. But at the same time, we have so many great numbers and everything. It's just the whole idea that it's such a dark topic and yet people take it so lightly. And it's funny because you see parallels like that still in society today with Orange is the New Black and things like that, which is actually based on a real story. But the same idea is that it's so crude because it's based on real things. So.
How many people are in the cast?
There's 21 in our cast. 19 are actually here from Juneau, and two, myself included, are from out of town.
So. And where are you from?
I'm from North Carolina originally.
It's got three more weekends.
Yes, we do. We run Wednesday through Sundays. Wednesday through Saturday is a 7:30 show, and Sundays we play at 4 o'clock, but we also added a 2 o'clock matinee on Saturday the 6th of December as well.
And that was sold out as well?
Yep. We opened up ticket sales for that yesterday, and it is already sold out. But like I said, make sure you come in anyway, and there's always people that don't show up, so we can still get you in. I'm sure of it.
And my daughter can sit on my lap.
Yeah, something like that. It's not a guarantee, but I really do think you have a great chance if you do show up. So,
is it for all ages?
No, I wouldn't. I would say this is at least a PG-13. You know, and that also depends on how much theater your children have seen. But I would highly recommend PG-13 is a good rule to put in place.
Charity Haskins, what's next for you after the sold-out show?
Oh, well, going back to North Carolina for the holidays and then probably back to New York City. So.
All right, well, anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I don't think so. Thank you so much for having us in. Make sure you come see Chicago and follow this wonderful musical. So, thank you so much.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, November the 19th, 2014. It's the birthday of the poet Sharon Olds, born in San Francisco, 1942, author of more than 10 books of poetry, most recently Stag's Leap. Sharon Olds, who said, "Whenever we give our pen some free will, we may surprise ourselves. All that wanting to seem normal in regular life, all that fitting in, falls away in the face of one's own strange self on the page." It's the birthday of the poet Alan Tate, Winchester, Kentucky, 1899, author of the poem Ode to the Confederate Dead, and biographies of Stonewall Jackson and Jefferson Davis. It's the anniversary of the National Women's Christian Temperance Union in 1874, whose members would march into saloons, sing hymns, pray, and ask the barkeepers to please stop selling liquor. It was on this date, 1861, Mrs. Julia Ward Howe sat down in Washington and wrote the Battle Hymn of the Republic. And it's the birthday of the 20th President of the United States, James Garfield, born in Orange, Ohio, 1831. He taught classics at Western Reserve Institute in Hiram, Ohio, and as a parlor trick, he could hold a pen in each hand and simultaneously write in Latin and Greek. Elected president in 1880, and a few months after he took office, he was fatally shot by a deranged gunman in the railroad station in Washington, D.C. And it was on this day in 1863, Abraham Lincoln delivered the Gettysburg Address at the dedication of the National Cemetery in Gettysburg, 4.5 months after the horrible battle. It was a cold, foggy morning. The president arrived about 10 a.m. Around noon, the sun came out. The crowds gathered on a hill overlooking the battlefield. About 15,000 people were there. A band played, a preacher prayed, and the orator of the day, Edward Everett, got up and spoke for more than 2 hours. And when he finished, the president spoke for just over 2 minutes, fewer than 300 words, only 10 sentences. Many of the crowd who attended didn't even realize that Lincoln had spoken because they were distracted by a photographer setting up his camera. Here's our poem for today, the second half of the Gettysburg Address by Abraham Lincoln. "The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth." Said Abraham Lincoln on this day in 1863. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by Arizona State University, with more than 70 campus degrees now available 100% online at online.asu.edu. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:14, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guest is Trail Mix's Executive Director, Eric Boris, here to talk about the dinner and auctions coming up this Saturday, November 22nd at Centennial Hall. Eric, thanks for coming down to the station today.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
So, for people who do not know, can you describe Trail Mix?
We are a nonprofit that builds and maintains trails in the city of Borough of Juneau. We probably worked on almost all the trails at one point or another. We've got partnerships with the Forest Service, state parks, and the city, and we try and coordinate between them, because there's a lot of trails in Juneau that'll start on city land, and they'll go to Forest Service land, and we were designed as a nonprofit that could work across boundaries and facilitate all of the trails in Juneau. We're the stewards of Juneau's trails, is what we call ourselves.
Do you have a degree in red tape cutting?
Oh, I'm working on it. I'm working on a doctorate on it.
Do you maintain about 50 or 60 trails?
Yeah, we do all the city trails and then just the regular brushing, clearing, and there's around 50, 60. And then we do three or four major projects a year to try and revitalize some of the old mining trails or, fill gravel into muddy spots and whatnot. So we do about three or four major restorations a year.
How do you determine which trail to work on?
Depends on where the funding's coming from. That's a lot of it. We've got projects lined up for the next 3, 4, or 5 years, and a lot of it's what the grants that will fund, like how much it's going to cost to fix a trail, and I'll try and find a grant that'll fit that. Or the city will have a priority, like we need to fix this trail, and they'll write a CIP, a capital improvement project, and we'll work on that. So kind of, all different sorts of ways.
This Saturday, the dinner and auction is benefiting the North Bridget Cove Trail.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I knew where it was.
Yeah, it's the trail of the Camping Cove Cabin, and I honestly didn't know it was officially called the North Bridget Cove Trail until recently, but we're working on that pretty heavily next year. It's I don't know if you've been out there, but my understanding is the cabin went in, and then people started hiking out to it without a trail being in place, so it's kind of a rooty, muddy mess, and it's easy to get. I've definitely got lost out there the first time I tried it. So we're trying to make it clearer. We're putting up a lot of signs so people will know where to go. There's a lot of up and down. We're going to put some staircases in and do some reroutes and try and harden it so it's a little easier to get out there, and mostly so you can find your way out there, because I've heard multiple stories of people hiking out in the winter and ending up just camping out in the snow because they can't find the cabin. So we're hoping to fix that next summer.
Good for you. So the North Bridget Cove Trail is being benefited by the dinner and auction.
Mm-hmm.
Bear Enough is making the dinner.
They are. They're catering. Yeah, and it's Chef Billy, I believe is his name. His famous meatloaf, which I hear is the best meatloaf you've ever had. So I'm looking forward to it. And then there's also vegetarian options and some chicken. And the Bear Enough they put on a good spread. So we're excited for it.
And dinner doors open at 6:00.
Doors open at 6:00. We're going to try and have dinner served at 6:45. We've got a live auction and a silent auction. Lots of great items donated from members of the community and businesses around town. We want to thank them greatly. And I'd also like to thank the Alaskan Brewing Company, because they chose us as their nonprofit they sponsored this year, and they've already given us a check for $10,000, which is pretty awesome for a nonprofit our size. That makes a big difference. And they're donating beer to this event. All the proceeds of the beer will go to Trail Mix as well. And they'll be there for us to thank them.
How about some of the items available?
There's lots of good flight scenes. If you've got a family coming into town this summer, lots of the helicopter companies have donated a lot of flight scenes, like tours to the glacier, or some of the airlines around, the small ones, have put in some tours. There's a lot of good gift certificates to restaurants and things like that. If you got a hot date planned, you can get a good deal on a gift certificate to a restaurant, and some other good art. So we've got a wide variety. The community is very supportive of us and our efforts, and we really appreciate it. So we've got lots of things, but roughly 100 items have been donated.
With some. Seems like most of the people in Juneau are active trail walkers, and so they should support you guys.
I would hope so. Yeah, most people are on a trail at some point or another, and yeah, we've been on most of them fixing them. So yeah, we look forward to the community support.
What's the cost to get in?
It is $35 if you are a member of Trail Mix. It's $45 if you are not a member, but you can buy a membership at the door, which is $35 for an individual or $50 for a family. And with that membership, you get some discounts at so local outfitters, which is great. It helps it out. And,
You have a lot of volunteers.
What's that?
You have a lot of volunteers.
We do have a lot of volunteers. We try and have a volunteer day once every month during the summer, and we had some great ones. We hauled a lot of gravel out at the Point Bridget Trail. Not Point Bridget, I'd say the Outer Point Trail. We did a lot of work out there, and we had a lot of good volunteers come in and move gravel there. And we did have some volunteers at the Point Bridget Trail as well, moving gravel. So yeah, we've had a lot of great volunteer days.
Have you ever counted how much gravel you use?
No, a lot. Mountains and mountains of it, because it's really the only way to make a sustainable trail in the rainforest here. We try and get away from the planking that people used for years, because it's great for the first couple of years, then it gets moldy and slippery, and a lot of people take some pretty heavy falls on it. So we're trying to make trails that will last for 100 years. So we try and move in a lot of gravel, and it's the only sustainable way to make trails.
Eric Boris, thank you for coming in and talking about trail mix and the dinner and auction coming up this Saturday night. Doors open at 6, dinner at 6:45. It's catered by the Baranoff. If people would like to donate and can't make it to the auction on Saturday, how can they do that?
JunoTrails.org, our website. It's a membership thing, but you can join there, and there's an option to donate as much as you want. And tickets are also available there.
All right, Eric, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
I love to go a-wandering along the mountain trail, and as I go, I love to sing my knapsack on my back. I love to wander by the stream that dances in the sun, so joyously it calls. Come join my happy song. Valerie, come join my happy song. I wave my hat to all I meet, and they wave back to me. And blackbirds call so loud and sweet from every greenwood tree. Valerie, Valera, Valerie, Valera, Valerie, Valera, from every greenwood tree.
Bill Staines. Time is 3:22, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guests are here to talk about youth hockey, Matt Boleyn and Steve Quinn. Thank you for coming down to the station, everybody.
Thank you very much. And, thank you for having us. And also, thank you very much to your staff for putting our photos online in a slideshow format, both for the high school games over the past few years and for our Youth Hockey Association. The kids like it, the parents like it a lot, and we really appreciate it.
When we're talking about youth hockey, what ages are we talking about?
With youth hockey, the Juneau Douglas Ice Association, anywhere from ages 4 to 18, and they're broken up accordingly, initially by skill level for the introductory kids, and then by age groups, under 8, 9 and 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and then on through 18.
How many people are there on a team?
It kind of depends. There's 6 on the ice at a time, and each team is usually 11 to 20 players at most. We have 175 kids in the Youth Association right now.
What's the schedule of games?
Every Saturday, the Squirts, which is 9 and 10, the Pee-wees, 10 and 11, and the Bantams, age 13 and 14, they have full ice games that are officiated, and we really want to encourage the public, if they've never been down to the rink, to come watch some hockey. The youth hockey games are free, and they're exciting, and these kids are fast, they're skilled, they love the game, and the coaches are out there working with these kids, and they're all volunteers, and it's every Saturday afternoon. And the game times can change a little bit from one week to the next. So we do encourage people to go to our website and learn more about us as well as see the game times. And our website is jdiahockey.com. And we are going to be playing games from now until mid-March. And the JDIA will also be hosting one of the state tournaments for the Bantam level, and that's ages 13 and 14. So we've got a lot of hockey to offer from our youth association, and we have plenty of hockey to offer from the high school team where Matt coaches, and that starts tomorrow. I'll let Matt talk more about that.
Yeah. Tomorrow night we open up the home game season, or the home schedule, with the JV games starting at 6:45 and the varsity starting at 8:15. And before all that, we actually have the Bantams, the Youth Association Bantam team, ages U14, starting at 5:30. So it's actually a pretty big night of hockey. We have three games back-to-back-to-back with the U14 kids as part of the Youth Association. That admission is free. And then following through the weekend, you know, Friday night we have JV at 2:15 in the afternoon, varsity at 8 o'clock. Saturday, the Youth Association starts their games at 2:45 and 4 o'clock, followed by the JV game at 5:30 and varsity game at 7.
Tell me about the Blue Line Club, please.
The Blue Line Club is the booster club that's made up of high school hockey parents that was started when the high school hockey team started. So they're just responsible for raising money and helping to appropriate the money to the right places.
What life lessons do people learn when they're enrolled in hockey?
Well, ultimately, we're in the people-building business. You know, we want to create good people. You know, hockey's just kind of secondary. You know, we all love the game, and we hope to pass on that love of the game for the kids to play long until their adulthood, but ultimately, we're trying to make good people.
How long do the games last?
The high school games, that's about 45 minutes of playing time, usually from the start to finish. The game ends up being about 2 hours. The youth games run about an hour pretty steadily.
I've seen a few games myself, and it's kind of exciting.
Yeah. You know, it's the fastest game that I know of.
Our youth hockey players, the seniors this year on the hockey team, they are among the first who played at Treadwell Ice Arena when it opened 12 years ago. So they've grown with the rink in judo. And four players on the high school team also had some success back in March. They competed in the Arctic Winter Games. And they came back with gold medals, or I guess they call them gold ulus. And one of them is the captain, Grant Ainsworth. He's a center. I think Grant plays just about every position.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Shane Moeller, a defenseman. And Corey Box, he's also a forward, correct? And Quinn Gist, all four of them had tremendous success with the Arctic Winter Games.
And we had someone just join us right now. You want to introduce yourself, please?
My name is Luke Sewell. I'm a senior at JDHS.
Why do you play hockey?
I've been doing it for a long time. I just really love the sport. I love the team. I love the coaches.
What's the life lesson you've learned from playing hockey?
Accountability is one thing. Be accountable for your actions. Be responsible, and do things for others.
Cool. Do you want to let me know about that website one more time, please?
The Youth Hockey Association's website is jdiahockey.com.
And how much does it cost for a youth to enter into the scene?
If you're just starting out, the introductory classes to hockey are just $100. And the equipment, we have enough equipment to loan introductory kids. And that costs $100 to borrow it. And when the equipment is returned, they get the $100 back. So essentially it's free. And if people still want to start hockey and try it for the first time, they can still come out and be with the introductory kids. As you get older, you get more ice time and it costs more with more games and more practices.
All right. Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
The ticket prices are $8 for adults, $5 for seniors, and $3 for students.
And on Saturday, the GDHS hockey team is they're actually encouraging the youth hockey players to wear their jerseys to the game and get in for free.
All right. Thanks for coming down to the station.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
So what all are in these bags?
Pajamas and then like iTunes cards and toys.
That's Samantha Eddington. She's rummaging around in a couple of stuffed full bags she's brought today to the Children's Hospital at Providence Alaska Medical Center in Anchorage. A couple of years ago, Samantha started her own nonprofit organization called Children Helping Children in Alaska. And since then, she's hosted craft fairs and garage sales to raise money for the things in those bags, toys of all sorts for the boys and girls who are patients here.
On each toy, I have stickers kind of made up that say Children Helping Children and have the logo.
Samantha says it was a personal loss that prompted her to start Children Helping Children in Alaska.
There's a girl at our church that was the same age as me, and she had cancer and died, and so I wanted to know what I could do to help. So I came in and asked what everybody needs, and so it just kind of started with whatever they needed I would bring in.
My name is Bonnie Hires, and I'm a child life specialist here at Providence Hospital.
Hires is Samantha's contact at the hospital.
She's a pretty dynamic young lady. She started about a year or so ago, and she's actually continued the donations coming in. Typically, we get kind of a one-time donation, so this is pretty impressive for her to start everything and get it going and make this happen.
Since Samantha is only 14, and for privacy reasons, she doesn't give the toys to the kids herself. But she says she hopes her donations let the kids in the hospital know there are people thinking of them and wishing them well. I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Alaska State Division of Behavioral Health.
This is Bird Note. Birds chasing other birds is a natural part of the avian world. But when you add a skilled falconer, that pursuit can protect a farmer's crops. Once the sport of kings, falconry has taken on a practical side, most notably to disperse pest birds from airports to prevent bird aircraft strikes. The best-suited birds of prey are peregrines, goshawks, and aplomado falcons. A blueberry farmer in Burlington, Washington, has hired a licensed falconer to keep birds, mainly starlings, from feeding on his crops. Pee-wee, a Barbary falcon, along with his dozen cohorts, can save the farmer 3 to 4 tons of blueberries every day. Using his ability to stoop at up to 100 miles per hour, Pee-wee dive bombs clusters of starlings, scaring them away from the newly ripening blueberries. After about 20 minutes of work, Pee-wee is whistled back to his trainer. Falcons are also keeping pest birds in check at vineyards, amusement parks, landfills, and even in city centers. Trained and wild, falcons are adding a new chapter to the long story of birds benefiting people. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Time is 3:35, and you're tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is Annie Humphreys from Shea, Alaska. It's a cooking school that lives in Juneau. Annie, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thanks for having me.
So for people who have not been to Shea, Alaska, can you please give me a bird's eye view of it?
Okay, we are very diverse. We do lots of different different things at our school. We do everything from we teach reach children. We have private parties. I just did a seven-year-old's birthday party, and we had so much fun. I had 11 young children, and we made chef hats, and they made little individual pizzas, and we decorated cupcakes and had a blast.
How many people can fit into your school at any particular time?
We've had probably 40 is pretty good. It gets a little tight. Those are for private parties. So anything from 20 to 35 is really comfortable for private parties. We do anniversaries. We basically any excuse for a gathering, we can do it. We are located in the annex across from Lyle's on Jordan Avenue. So there's lots of parking.
So that's a good idea. It happened to me one time. I got cooking classes as a gift for my birthday.
Yes, we do gift certificates too. And I am doing a special thing starting January 3rd. We're going to have the Shea Alaska 28-Day Challenge. It's a detox. So it's also a great gift certificate or stocking stuffer to start out your new year clean. And it's really going to be fun. So it'll be once a week, and then you'll get the whole week's instructions. So it will be from January 3rd to the 30th.
All right. So you've got some cooking classes coming up in the near future.
Yes, I do. Tomorrow we have from 5:30 to 7:30, we're doing pie classes on Gillette and cobblers. So we'll be making all three of those. Starts at 5:30. Pre-registration is required. So you can reach me at Annie, A-N-N-I-E, at ShayAlaska.com or 723-8801.
I don't want to give away, I don't need to give away all your secrets, but what's one of the secrets for making a great pie crust?
Butter. Butter. Very flaky.
Cool. What about making good potatoes, skin or no skin?
No skin, and you really need to let them rest after if you've steamed them. You need to let the steam sweat off a little bit to make a really creamy, velvety potato.
I noticed one of your classes that you had offered was going beyond the standard turkey dinner.
Yes, we're going to do that on Saturday. We're going to show three different ways to prepare turkey. We'll also be doing turkey for two, for those of you who are not going to have a big family dinner day. We'll be doing traditional, and then I'm going to demonstrate a large beer can turkey on the barbecue. And then, of course, gravy good enough to drink. So that'll be Saturday morning from 10 to 12 or 10 to 1.
Hints on making good gravy?
Oh, well, I put red wine in mine. And I do I use fresh herbs and other secrets that you'll have to find out when you come on Saturday.
One of the classes you're teaching this holiday season is gifts in a jar.
Right.
Just describe that, please.
Those are really very fun. They can be any type of sauce or, say, a dessert sauce that you make. I encourage people to can, and so we'll be showing how to can your favorite sauces. I'll also demonstrate making, well, we're going to can salsa. And then we'll also be doing different crafts and different food items that you can build in a jar that you can give as a gift and how to decorate them.
And when is that class?
December 15th.
What food mistakes happen around the holidays, and how do people recover from those?
Well, I think everyone who's ever cooked a turkey has probably left the giblets inside one time or another. Very hilarious. I just heard it the other day on television, somebody talking about it, that you recover probably over many years of time. It's very funny, and you never get over it. you know, the paper bag inside the turkey. A lot of times I encourage, if people have not cooked a turkey very much, is to not stuff it. Because a lot of times stuffing it, you know, you have to be very careful about, you know, getting all the stuffing out, and for, you know, reasons that it may go bad. And just undercooking the turkey usually is what a lot happens. So you really need to get your meat thermometer out and keep an eye on it.
When you're making turkey for a group of people, how much turkey should you allow for each person?
Well, we always want leftovers. So I always figure about a half a pound myself for my guests, and then I always will be able to give them turkey to take home.
And how long does a turkey, typical turkey, take to cook?
Well, it depends. If you stuff it, it's usually about 30 minutes per pound. But if you're not stuffing it, then it's a lot less time. So it depends on how you're going to cook it. But basically, the rule of thumb is about 30 minutes to a pound.
Where did you learn to cook, Annie?
Martha Stewart. And myself. I taught myself. But when Martha Stewart started her first book, I think it was in the 70s. And I also learned here in 1975, one of the guys I worked with was an awesome cook. And so every Monday night we used to have about 30 people up on First Street, and we would cook every Monday night something different. And that got me inspired. But I'm one of six girls, so my mother was an awesome cook. And three of us in the family actually cater. So I'm from Redding, California originally, and they're still there, still into food and everything. So it was a family thing.
What's your favorite thing to cook?
It depends what week it is. This week I've been, because it's been so cold, I've been doing braised short ribs, which is beautiful. And I've been using Alaskan smoked porter. 1 cup of that and 1 cup of dry red wine, and it is a beautiful dish. Very good.
I feel like I want to ask you a lot more questions, but I don't want you to give away all your secrets that people normally pay money. What does it cost to come to one of your classes?
Well, I'm trying to keep them down to 50 if I have good participation. $50. Normally, they run from 75 to 100. And the reason why I've lowered the price is so that more people can come in and enjoy and have a really fun time, because cooking is fun.
What requests do you get to have people learn?
It's pretty diverse. I had a group of young ladies wanting to learn how to make sauces, which is, you know, a pretty good base to different things. So I did a sauces, marinades, and that type of class, and then canning. I really try to encourage canning, you know, because our food costs are getting so high that it's really great to be able to, you know, can your own food and just be able to go in and do it. You know, go in and have, you know, where your food came from.
All right, Annie Humphries from Shea, Alaska. One more time, can you give people the directions to find you and then to get you on the internet and to get you on the telephone?
Yes, we're at 2092 Jordan Avenue, Suite 585. And we are, you can reach me at 723-8801 or Annie, A-N-N-I-E, at SheaAlaska.com.
All right, Annie, anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Happy holidays.
Turkey burps just won't go away. There's cranberries, green beans, succotash and squashes, potatoes of four different kinds, mashed and sweet.
Lieberstein, 747, you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. Holy Trinity is making 250 pies this Saturday. The proceeds help to keep the lights and heat on at McPeters Hall. You can buy a pie to take home. You can buy a pie to donate to the Glory Hole. You can buy a virtual pie, which is a donation to Holy Trinity. They'll make them. You get to take them home and bake or freeze them. Pick them up between noon and 4 this Saturday, November 23rd, at Holy Trinity downstairs next to McPeters Hall. Pies donated to the Glory Hole will be delivered for you. If you need more information on that, give them a call at 586-3532. In the studio with me now is Sean Isley from Discovery Southeast here to talk about the 25th anniversary and their annual report, which has just come out. Sean, thank you very much for coming down to the station.
Thanks for having me.
So for people who don't know, Discovery Southeast.
Mission is connecting people with nature, and we were founded 25 years ago, it's our 25th anniversary, by a bunch of guides who saw themselves giving these great experiences to visitors and realized that a lot of the local kids don't have those same opportunities to see local areas and to bond with nature. And so they started Discovery Southeast, and 25 years later, we're a thriving organization.
What kind of changes have happened over the years?
Well, I think we've changed our focus a little bit to work on our curriculum, work with community partners such as the schools. Kind of our biggest program now is working with 3rd through 5th grade classrooms, and we send a naturalist into each school every season, fall, winter, and spring, and take the kids outdoors. We also have summer camps that are bursting at the seams right now. I'm really excited about that. And teacher expeditions to take teachers out and give them experiences outdoors that they can bring back to their classroom.
How many people are on your staff?
Probably about a dozen. We have a ton of part-time naturalists and a really small office staff of 2 or 3 people.
And how is it funded?
All through donations. So we get some business partnerships. Hecla Greens Creek is a fantastic supporter, as well as the Juneau Community Foundation. And we get a lot of members. We really rely on that for the foundation as individual donors. For our 25th anniversary, we're doing a push to see if we can get 500 members this year and 1,000 members by the end of 3 years.
I'm not looking for an exact number right now, unless you know it off the top of your head, but how many youths have been served over the years, and what were their ages?
Tens of thousands. We did a calculation just kind of using the rough numbers, and yeah, tens of thousands of Juneau families. By the time you think about all the school classrooms that we've been in, all the summer programs, we've run camps in the past to do week-long trips across Admiralty, canoe camps. We're looking at doing those kind of camps again. We're looking at doing after-school programs for middle schoolers. Historically, yeah, tens of thousands.
What are some of the new programs you're working on?
We're excited to launch an after-school program this winter. So we'll be going into Floyd Dryden, NDZ, working with their BAM program, which is a fantastic after-school program. And really the structure is all there thanks to Betsy Brenneman. And so we're really excited to plug in and give kids some outdoor programming and hopefully follow that up with the ability to get outdoors in more of a bigger setting. So do it a little bit after school, and then on the weekend, maybe at the end of the semester, get out and do an overnight trip. And we're excited to see if we can partner with AWARE this summer to run some trips for high schoolers too. So really, you know, we say when we're working with elementary kids, we teach the children to be comfortable and curious outdoors, and we're looking at seeing how we can create that continuity as they go up in the ages for middle schoolers and ultimately high schoolers too.
And you have a number of publications out.
Yeah, Richard Carstensen has done a fantastic job with some publications this past year. Natural History of Juneau Trails just came out. You know, we actually We did an order of that we thought would last us for a few years, and after less than a year, we're almost out. That's a great guide to Juneau Trails, Watershed by Watershed. With Kathy Connor, he did a book, Reading Southeast Alaska's Landscape, which is a shorter book, about 20 pages about geology, and it's wonderful. I took that on a canoe trip to, or a kayak trip to Berners Bay, and it was just awesome to read along with the geology as I was kayaking through it. That's a great book. And we're really happy. We've been working with Mary Lou King. She's been doing 90 short walks around Juneau for a long time, and she came out with a new edition in coordination with Discovery Southeast that we'll have at First Friday coming up December 5th at Foggy Mountain Shop.
Have they added to the 90?
Sorry?
Have they added to the 90?
Yeah, I think it's 90, around 90 short walks or 90-plus short walks around Juneau. Last time I counted, there were about 110 in there.
And that's happening at Foggy Mountain?
Foggy Mountain Shop, December 5th for First Friday from 4:30 to 7. Not only will Mary Lou King's new book be there, but Discovery Southeast members will also get 20% off their purchases at Foggy Mountain Shop. And if you're not a member, that's a perfect time to sign up.
And you mentioned this earlier, the goal for new members this year.
Yeah, we're shooting to get 500 new members. It's really it's interesting. When you think about outdoor education, it's something that's very important for children in our community. But it's something that's hard to fund. Not a lot of outside groups are going to come in and do this for our community. So it's really important that we have a local base of support if we want this in our community. So we're shooting at getting 500 members by the end of this year, so we're doing kind of a final push right now. And we have a 25th advisory committee of some of the folks that have founded Discovery Southeast and been with us for a long time. And they've generously donated to match up to $10,000 of donations that we receive in November or December. So if folks are waiting to renew their membership or they're interested in joining, now's the perfect time. It'll be matched dollar for dollar by those folks.
And how can they do that?
DiscoverySoutheast.org.
Makes it nice and simple.
There you go.
Are you surprised at the natural knowledge that kids have here in Juneau?
Oh, it's wonderful, yeah. I'm learning things every time I go out in the field with them.
Cool. And how many trips do you make?
We're in five elementary schools right now every season. So we do, what are the numbers there? That's like 150 trips a year, just counting the classrooms, and then 9 weeks of summer camp. We have discovery days that take place on in-service days where we're getting kids out in the field. There are probably at least a dozen of those. And then teacher expeditions, at least two or three every summer.
All right, so First Friday, get your new copy of Around 90 Short Walks Around Juneau, Discovery Southeast. Anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask.
No, thanks a lot. It's fantastic to be here. It's a great organization. It's a pleasure to be representing it.
Support comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, offering fresh roasted coffees for Southeast Alaska since 1974 and dedicated to building healthy and happy lives at home and in coffee growing communities around the world. Information at heritagecoffee.com.
The Juneau Arts and Humanities Council invites you to experience the work of internationally acclaimed poet and storyteller, Ke Aloha, the first poet laureate of Hawaii, on Saturday, November 22nd, 7 p.m. at the Jack. Ke Aloha is the founder of Hawaii Slam, Youth Speaks Hawaii, and First Thursdays, the largest registered slam poetry event. Come and experience the power of spoken word. Tickets available at Hearthside Books, The Jack, or jahc.org.
You're listening to the Alaska Native Artist Spotlight.
My name is Mike McIntyre. I'm from Bethel, Alaska, originally from Eek, Alaska, and I do a lot of art. I kind of dedicated some part of my life to doing a lot of art, so in 100 years, 50 years, I'll have something up there that could be hung or listened to or, people know who it's from. I like to put something beautiful out there so it'll be remembered forever. My parents, my dad, my uncles, my great-grandma, I kind of grew up into people who did art. Later on in life, it just became part of me. Dad used to carve masks and stuff, do ivory carvings, and I would just sit there and stare for hours just watching him make something. He gave me a little Yupik curved knife, and I started making sharp sticks. That's the first thing you start doing is making sharp sticks with a curved knife. And after I grew up and became a man and started doing it myself, my kids started making sharp sticks. So so hopefully in the future my kids, my sons, will be able to start carving masks just like me or my dad.
The Alaska Native Artist Spotlight Series is produced by Quantic Broadcast Corporation. See the art and artists online at knba.org.
Funding for the series has been provided by the National Endowment for the Arts Artworks, Rasmussen Foundation, the Atwood Foundation, ASRC Energy, Wells Fargo, Koniag Incorporated, ConocoPhillips Alaska, and by Bristol Bay Native Corporation.
Programming support on KTOO is provided by Silver Bow Bakery and Catering, announcing ready-to-serve Thanksgiving meals for 8 to 12 people or half orders serving 4 to 6. Ready for pickup and eat Thanksgiving Day. Silver Bow Catering accepting Thanksgiving orders at 586-4146.
Time is 3:57, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. Weather forecast for tonight: rain diminishing later on with areas of fog. Low temperatures 33 to 38 degrees. Thursday, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain. High temperatures around 40 degrees. Thursday night, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain. Friday, rain with high temperatures around 41 degrees. Saturday and Saturday night looks like more rain with high temperatures around 41 degrees. Coming up tomorrow at 3 on a June afternoon, Jonah Osterhout will be your host. We'll talk about Sunday's Remembrance Gathering. Andy Klein will be here to highlight the new winter beers from the Alaska Brewing Company. We'll profile the Salvation Army with Lance and Donna Walters. We'll also hear about local arts activities of the regular feature Arts Up. That Writer's Almanac, Burnout, Musical More today, tomorrow at 3 on a June afternoon.